a sobering measure of the true toll of the COVID-19 pandemic. The World Health Organization says that nearly 15 million people died in the first 2 years. That's more than double what countries were reporting. So, what lessons should be learned? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the programme. I'm Adrian Finnegan. It is the most defining health crisis of our times. No matter where we are in the world, the coronavirus pandemic has changed the way we live. And now, for the first time, we know more people died because of it than governments were reporting. On Thursday, the World Health Organization revealed its first, most comprehensive estimate. It said that 14.9 million people died in the first 24 months of the pandemic. That's mostly as a direct result of the virus itself and because people couldn't get proper treatment since hospitals were overwhelmed. The WHO says that it's a wake-up call for all countries to invest in data and their healthcare systems to make them more resilient to crises.
Data is indeed the lifeblood of public health. COVID has illuminated a staggering toll already that we have seen, 14.9 million excess deaths, but it has also illuminated a staggering data gaps in countries. Too much is unknown and there is too much delays in getting life and death information.
So let's take a closer look at that World Health Organization data. The line in orange here is the number of excess deaths between January 2020 and December 2021. The WHO defines excess deaths as the difference between actual number of deaths and deaths that were expected based on data from previous years if there had been no pandemic. And the graph below is the official number of COVID-19 deaths during that time. 80% of those excess deaths were in 20 countries, including India, Brazil, Iran, the Philippines, South Africa, the UK and the US. And when we look at gender, more men died than women. So, to discuss all of this, joining us, our guests for today from Bath in the UK, Dr. Bharat Bankaria, a senior clinical lecturer at the University of Exeter Medical School. From Rabat, Azadine Ibrahimi, professor of medical biotechnology at the Rabat Medical School and director of Med Biotech. And in Pondicherry, India, T. Sundaraman, a health systems expert, former professor and head of the School of Health System Studies at the Tata Institute of Social Sciences in Mumbai. A warm welcome to you all. Dr. Bankaria, let's start with you first. What do you make of these World Health Organization figures? Are you at all surprised?
No, I'm not surprised at all. And I would go further and to say in some countries, this is most probably also a underestimate because not all countries have robust monitoring systems for illness, morbidity, mortality, death certification. And one more thing that we are not including in these figures is deaths brought forward as a result of body damage following a COVID infection. What I'm referring to is the consequences of long COVID. So it is disappointing, it is worrying, and you know, it is, in my opinion, a underestimate of the actual number of deaths.
But the figure, it pales into comparison, though, compared to the Spanish flu outbreak of 1918, doesn't it?
Indeed, but what we don't know is how long this COVID pandemic is going to continue, whereas the Spanish flu pandemic, was for a defined shorter period. So we're not out of the woods with COVID. And furthermore, that was more than 100 years ago when facilities, medical facilities, vaccines and therapeutics did not exist. So on that front, of course, science has prevailed and done a fantastic job with bringing the vaccines out and saving a lot of lives. Having said that, it is upsetting and disappointing that many people, especially in low-income countries, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Africa, Indonesia, they suffered and many of them died.
Professor Ibrahimi, Dr. Bankaria touched upon it there. Perhaps you can give us a more fulsome explanation. Why were original government figures so off the mark? Why is it so difficult to get accurate death figures?
Well, I think it's a good question, Adrian, but I think coming back to Africa, I think it's very, the monitoring system and the reporting system is really not that efficient. So when we look at South Africa and we are talking about 1.3 billion persons, we are saying that almost three or four countries has a really good reporting. And just to give you an idea about it, so to show the difference, when you compare two countries, Northern African countries, when you compare Morocco to Algeria with the same number of the population, you get like double actually death in Morocco than in Algeria. Worse than that, when you compare Tunisia to Egypt, Egypt with 10 times more the size of the population, more than Tunisia, you have 28,000 deaths in Tunisia and you have around 24,000 deaths in Egypt. I think this reporting system is not there, and actually some countries, and we have to say it frankly, rather to give the right number, they prefer to put the numbers under the rug and say there is no COVID. But I think when you look at the numbers of the WHO, I think it's quite worrisome, because if you take just three parts of the world, India, China, and Africa, we are talking about the half size of the population of the world, and the numbers are not there, I think. And I think it's really to question this number. Why? For a simple reason, because we'll be confronting more and more maybe pandemic coming sooner. And the other thing, we are not out of the COVID, and answering and responding to the COVID needs three things. We need to be lots of transparency, and anticipation, and the participative approach to talking about the person-to-person actually noticing or giving notice that they are infected or there is death in their place. And the other thing, the medical corps actually should be involved in this reporting.
All right, let's go to Pondicherry then. Sundar, Professor, again, Dr. Pankhania touched upon it in his first answer. The figures tell us nothing about those who are still suffering due to the virus with long COVID and may succumb to their symptoms at some point in the future, or about the number of people who are going to die due to long-term health complications long after the original infection.
Yes. So, yes, I think those are structural reasons why this figure would be an underestimate. But one must remember, when the government was reporting deaths, they were reporting confirmed COVID-19 deaths. And the stringent criteria for confirmed deaths meant that without a test, if a person died even with clinical suspicion, it wasn't in practice reported as a COVID-19 death. Now what we are measuring is an excess of all-cause mortality. And when you see that, it includes deaths due to COVID, due to non-confirmed COVID, due to long COVID, late COVID-related complications or worsening of comorbidities or acceleration of other diseases. It includes deaths due to the old illnesses like tuberculosis and non-communicable diseases where access to care was compromised. And I think it also includes deaths that are secondary and acted indirectly through a worsening social and demographic thing. You saw the huge degree of displacement and migration. We know that from journalist reports, people died on travel. They may not be huge numbers, but it shows how social and economic factors also led to health compromises. So excess mortality is measuring far more than COVID-19 deaths. And this is something I think governments have to understand.
Yeah,
that at some point, that it's not deaths only due to the virus.
I know that.
But the deaths due to the virus are underestimated because of many, many structural issues.
I know that there's been a lot of controversy there in India because of these World Health Organization figures. We'll come to that controversy in just a moment. But first of all, Dr. Pankhania, the pandemic, of course, is still with us. People are still dying due to the disease. And yet in some parts of the world, life appears to be very much back to normal. I mean, while we can't continue with a permanent sense of crisis hanging over us, is it wrong to go back to normal behaviours when people are still falling sick?
This is a lovely issue that we must address. So before I go on to answering your question, I just wanted to say something about the comment made by a colleague from Pondicherry in India, which is the measuring of excess deaths. If we look at the WHO report, it also articulates that these excess deaths were most probably COVID-related. And whilst excess deaths are all deaths, the point is, the key point is, these are excess deaths. And those excess deaths most probably are COVID-related. Now, coming on to you, with respect to what do we do? Do we remain in restrictions or do we drop our guard? My answer is as follows. Vaccines have been proven to work very well. So the combination of vaccines plus therapeutics deployed sensitively and equitably across the world will take us into a better place. So if we recall backwards, initially the vaccines were produced and only the richer nations got them and the rest of the world got nothing. Now, in a fortunate position that we are, we've got enough vaccines for the West to continue with its booster programs and for other low-income nations to also give good immunizations. So what we need to do is continue with immunization, continue with delivering therapeutics as well, antivirals, and that way, economically, we can also function rather than being in a permanent state of lockdown. And then the other thing we have to do is watchfulness. We just don't know where this is going. It looks like it is better in Europe at the moment, but then it is our summer period. So what we need to do is continuously monitor, continuously watch, and look out for variants. And one way to stop variants from arising is immunize the low-income countries which have yet to be immunized, and that way we will all be in a better place.
Professor Ibrahimi, what lessons must governments learn from the crisis and these figures?
I think that's the big problem, actually, because if we don't get the right numbers, it will be really very difficult to prepare the response on which lesson to take from the pandemic. Actually, even the vaccines, and my colleague was talking about the vaccines. Now in Africa, for example, we are not having problems with having the vaccines in these countries. People are not vaccinating themselves. So I think it's a really big issue here, how we get to get people to be aware that the vaccination is the only issue. Coming back to your question, the lesson, I think the first thing that we have to do, and we were talking about the indirect death, people that were not related directly to the COVID, but we lost a lot of people with cancer, with diabetes, with other diseases, chronic diseases, because we didn't give them the enough care or the good care during the pandemic. So I think the health system should be really modified, and we have to put in place a new health system that can manage actually to confront and respond to the pandemic. But on the other hand, without losing sight, the other people having chronic disease. And doing that, we can do it by two things. Expanding the walls of these hospitals without really expanding them physically, it's just being able to do it and mobilizing the competencies and mobilizing the healthcare people when we need them and have them the qualification and the training to do that. And I think to do that, it's a really something that we have to think about right now, not as a strategy or as a vision, but as actually as procedures and the plans. And that the only way that we can confront beside transparencies. And here I have to say something because I think Africa gave a really good example, because I remember South Africa by its transparency about the Omicron actually and talking about it soon enough and giving the alert to the whole world, actually it was a really good thing. So why the numbers matters, why the transparency matters.
Sundar, Professor, as we said a few moments ago and as we heard in the discussion, India's government objected to the World Health Organization death figures, saying that it had conveniently chosen to ignore the data that the Indian government had submitted. Now, Congress has demanded that a cross-party commission be formed to ascertain the actual number of deaths in India. Why are the WHO estimates so controversial there in India in particular?
One reason is obvious. The government had a very strong claim to having had one of the best, most stringent, but most effective lockdowns on the world. And this rubbishes that claim, and that is obviously unacceptable. But the other issue is also about the reliability of the system of death reporting, which we knew earlier was reported only a part, that death registration is not complete. And in some of the most problematic states, it's highly incomplete. And even birth registration is incomplete. Government has come out recently with a report where it attributes accounting percentage, which has gone up to 96%. But that in a year, and that too a crisis year, is not being believed by many. So I think unless you have a system of reporting that can reliably give district level monthly all-cause mortality, to suddenly expect that level of detailed mortality in such a short time, usually it is verified by a sample registration system, that verification takes longer. Without that is unexpected. Therefore, the government's current position that it is projecting is not being taken very seriously by anybody who has not got an open-eyed belief in what the government says. So there's an issue about our death reporting, even otherwise, and that's coming into the fore. I think that's the major issue on that. And
okay.
Second, some of the issues raised upon the modeling methods are also being a matter of controversy. Some of them are true. They are not the best possible. But under the circumstances, they are corroborated by many other studies. And therefore, I think this the balance of credibility, I think, should go with the current estimates, which are much higher.
All right. Dr. Pankhania, then. So if India is unhappy at these figures, which it argues have been arrived at through modelling and assumptions rather than the figures actually provided by the government, could other countries take issue with the World Health Organization's methodology? This is coming back to something you were saying earlier on about the actual figure of deaths is probably much higher, but how wide of the mark could the World Health Organization be given its methodology, which a big country like India has taken issue with?
It's always very difficult for WHO because it has to tread so carefully with its members. And we know WHO has to keep all the partners happy. And the governments like India, China, Pakistan, Bangladesh are all embarrassed. India has been an independent country for over 70 years. But if you look at its investment in its public health infrastructure, it is embarrassing. It is really embarrassing for an upcoming nation. And of course, therefore, the current politicians will want to downplay the tragedy of COVID, as well as the tragedy of all those other illnesses that the poor citizens of India suffer. So going forward, I wish I knew what the answer was about how we can make the WHO stronger, more independent, and less subject to influence by member states. We know, for example, when SARS in 2003 broke, they had to work very slowly and carefully with China. And then in 2019, when COVID arose, similarly, they had to work very gingerly and smart-footedly, politically, diplomatically. And so these are the difficulties that I feel very sorry for that WHO has to navigate.
Dr. Pankhania, I just want to get your opinion here. A controversial question, perhaps. Do these figures show that, despite much criticism from those whose lives continue to be disrupted there, that China is perhaps right in its pursuit of zero COVID?
Well, China's done well if you look at the figures, because with its zero COVID policy, fewer Chinese people officially have died. My issue is, listen, China, you could make it better for your citizens, because now we've got the vaccines. So why don't you use the Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca brands, for example, which have proven greater efficacy? And the idea is, we don't want you to die. So immunize those vulnerable groups, have the antivirals at the ready if needed, and then you can also open up rather than incarcerate large numbers of your population. So in answer to your question, do I think China is doing the right thing right now? I think it is a bit too draconian. Mm. Only China can do what China does.
Right.
I would be more relaxed about how I would do it, which is immunize and be a little bit more relaxed.
Professor Ibrahimi, What are we to make of the fact that, according to the World Health Organization figures, 53% of the deaths occurred in lower to middle income countries, while just 15% occurred in high income countries, only 4% in low income countries?
Well, actually, it's amazing that we are having these numbers, actually. But coming back to Africa that I know the most, I think there is some parameters that helped actually the African population to survive the COVID, mostly because it's a young population with a strong immunity. And I think that's why we have these numbers in Africa. Beside that, I think the reporting system in Africa is not working that much. It's why we don't know the exact number, actually, of people dying or people being infected in Africa. The other thing, I think, what's happened in the richest country, I think, mostly because they have a robust reporting system, and they were reporting all the death. Because the other thing, when you have the middle income, the problems there, I think, when it was a really massive dying and massive deaths number, we couldn't catch up with the numbers. And I think why we are not reporting that. And actually, without talking about the numbers of the WHO, with their problems, actually, WHO has a lot of issues with the parties, with the countries and the governments. Looking at the numbers given by a couple of studies, we have a Lancet paper that just came out from a Canadian study. We have the Washington Institute. I think we are off at least between 4 to 6 million deaths. And I think that's really we have to count for that if we want to prepare nicely any kind of pandemic that will be coming. And I think, and we have to say that, we'll not go for 100 years before seeing a pandemic. I think it will be coming soon.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately, yes. Sunda, what do these figures then tell us, bearing in mind what we've just heard, about how we should be preparing for and tackling any future pandemic in terms of health systems and data gathering?
I think any country must be able to guarantee a minimum set of standards regarding universal health care, with primary health care as its core. That should be seen as a public good. And if a country, the gap, the financial and structural gap that needs to be closed to achieve it, must be pooled from the global rich and be able to make sure that each country needs it. It's required not only for the health of those countries, but for the health of the rest. Because if you are not able to guarantee a minimum level of infectious disease control during normal times, you are hardly in a position to guarantee it during a pandemic. And secondly, you need to make sure that the supply chains and the whole manufacturing processes and the patent rights, which go along with access to essential commodities manufactured and supplied in short time, these structures cannot be dependent only on one or two sites of manufacture and innovation and production. They require to be democratized. They require to also be universalized on that. I think in terms of registration of deaths, monthly district level all-cause mortality reporting with a fair degree of externally assessed accuracy should be a minimum standard that needs to be in place across the countries. I think we have the wealth, we have the technical know-how to achieve it. But to build the institutions that are capable of delivering it, to ensure the governance that is required to do so, these two are definitely challenges that we need to take on this time.
Gentlemen, it has been fascinating. Thank you for giving us your time today, for being with us on that Inside Story. Bharat Pankhania, Azadeen Ibrahimi and T. Sundaraman. And thank you, too, for watching. Don't forget you can see the programme again at any time by going to our website at aljazeera.com. For further discussion on this topic, go to our Facebook page. That's at facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle at AJ Inside Story. From me, Adrian Finnegan, and the whole team here in Doha. Thanks for watching. See you again. Bye now.